I'd like to introduce our speaker today. His name is Wei Yu. He's a health economist here at Herc, and he began here in 2000. So prior to coming to Herc, he was a research assistant professor at Boston University Medical School. His research interests cover budget impact analysis, healthcare cost determination, insurance payment methods, and cost effectiveness analysis. Between 2006 and 2014, he was a professor and dean of the School of Public Economics and Administration in Shanghai University of Finance and Economics. There, he taught health economics and cost effectiveness analysis, and also conducted research on China's healthcare system reform and also financing policy for public hospitals and physician compensation. So he returned to Herc back in 2014. So Wei, I'll turn things over to you now.
Okay, thanks, Jin, for the introduction. Hi, everyone. Thank you for attending the Herc course on cost effectiveness analysis. This is the last lecture. The topic we're going to discuss today is how to make CEA, cost effectiveness analysis, more relevant in the U.S. healthcare. The background of this question is that U.S. has not accepted the cost effectiveness analysis as a criteria for health resource allocation as wider as other developed countries.
I'm sorry, we're not seeing your screen yet.
No screen, okay. Can you see the screen now?
I can see it now, thank you. Thank you.
Okay, thanks for reminding me. This lecture was given by Paul Burnett, the former director of Herc in the last year. Paul retired last month, so I'm taking over the teaching on this topic. Some of the slides were prepared by Paul, but I made some additions to address this issue from several different perspectives. I'm discussing this question in five steps. The first, I will review the basic principle of cost-effectiveness analysis. Then I will introduce the background of the cost-effective analysis used in the United States. After that, I will give some examples of CEA used in the U.S. and other developed countries. Then I will come back to review some barriers to CEA use in the U.S. with some cases. The last discussion will be the challenges in using cost effectiveness for prioritization of healthcare. We'll go to topic one. The cost effectiveness analysis can be outlined with five statements. First, the CEA is always used for comparing a new treatment, device, drugs, or treatment strategy with the existing treatment. We usually call standard care for the same medical condition. Now, second, costs are measured from societal perspective, including all costs such as patients' time, transportation, caregiver costs, etc. Similarly, all outcomes of the intervention should be identified. Now, we use quality adjusted life years as the outcome measurement. Now, another principle of the CEA is to adopt a long-term horizon. That is, we measure all the costs and outcomes during patient's lifetime in most of the CEA studies. The last principle of CEA is that we need to discount all costs and outcomes occurred in the future to reflect low value associated with the delay. Now, at this point, you probably have some questions about this principle. Indeed, there are disagreement and debates on these principles. For example, if the patient on the study live longer due to the new drug, then they may develop other medical conditions. Then the question is, should we include those conditions those medical problems in our cost and outcomes measurement. Another example is that what is the appropriate discount rate? And given today's topic and the time limit, I'm not going to discuss this in detail, but if you need some reference, I can you can email me. This is an incremental cost effectiveness ratio called ICER. Now, when we try to determine if we should adopt a new treatment on the study, we use the incremental cost effectiveness ratio as the criteria. ICER is measured by the ratio of difference in cost over difference in outcome. In fact, ICER tells us for each quality adjusted life year how much extra cost we need to pay. Then decision makers will compare ICER of a new treatment to a critical threshold to determine whether the new treatment is cost effective or not. In the U.S., this has started a long time ago, and $50,000, now the range to $150,000 per quarter is considered as the range for cost effectiveness decision making. Now, any treatment below $50,000 is considered as cost effective for sure, and beyond $150,000 is considered as cost ineffective. But this, there always there is discussions about what is the appropriate threshold with the rising income and also in the economy. The Institute for Clinical and Economic Review, there is an institute that also called ICER, is a not-for-profit organization located at Boston. Now, ICER, that's the institute, evaluates clinical effectiveness and value of drugs. In general, there are two major considerations in terms of the method to establish the threshold. Now, the ICER has recommended a range between $50,000 to $175,000 this year. I think we should discuss the method or the strategy to estimate the threshold. The first one is to use willingness to pay from societal perspective. That is how much the society is willing to pay for each quarter, for each quality adjusted life year. Now, the second method is to estimate the opportunity cost of gaining a quality adjusted life year. Of these two methods, according to the Institute for Clinical and Economics Review, the survey, and there is the people who supporting the opportunity cost is increasing. Again, there's a literature about the topic, and I'm not going to get into the details on this. Now, this CEA, cost effectiveness analysis plane diagram, provide a good overview of cost effectiveness analysis. This plane consists of a four quadrant diagram. The horizontal axis measures difference in effectiveness, and the vertical measures difference in cost. Now, if the ICER fall into this range, that means the new treatment is costs more and is less ineffective. So this intervention is unacceptable, and so it's always unacceptable. And if the ICER fall into this region, the right bottom region means that is the new treatment or new technology is more effective and cost less. So it's always acceptable. Now, so any of the treatment fall into these two regions, the decision can be made very easy. Now, this region has some questions. That means it costs less, but also with sacrifice, with some sacrifice in effectiveness. Now, how much you can accept a new treatment, it depends on the budget and the affordability issues. Now, most of our discussion is in this region. I mean, it's more effective, the new drug or new technology, and then the cost more. And I just mentioned that there's $50,000 threshold ratio per quarter. That means if any point under this area, in this area, is considered cost effectiveness, then if I draw another region, the threshold value becomes like $175. That probably the line will be it will be here somewhere. So then you can see if the ICER fall into this area, then it has to be considered carefully with other factors. With this approach, when this approach is often helpful, we should note that the ICER is not a single number, but rather a distribution with uncertainty. One approach to consider the distribution is to perform a bootstrap analysis. This analysis, it generates confidence intervals around cost and effectiveness by sampling from a distribution of each. Now, when consider the concurrency and the graph on the CE plane, you can visualize how ICER is distributed over a sample population. Then you can make a decision. But in some cases, we have some studies here. We found that ICER, the distribution of ICER, the confidence intervals are so wide that cross the cost effectiveness region and also ineffectiveness region. So that decision is very hard to make. Where can CEA be applied? It can be used in individual decisions of physician and the patient, and also for system decisions can be used for coverage decision and practice guidelines. Now, I would like to make a poll. I want to understand today's the audience, so that will I can adjust my talk in following topic. Now, the first poll is, have you been involved in CEA study? No, and yes, if you're an investigator in a CEA study or health economist, to some extent, that means if you're a project manager and data analyst.
Responses are coming in. We'll give everyone a few more moments to respond, and then we'll close it out and go through the results here.
Okay.
And it looks like we've slowed down, so I'm going to close that out. And what we're seeing is 58% of the audience saying that no, they have not been involved in a CEA study. 25% saying yes, they have. And 17% to some extent. Thank you, everyone.
Okay, great. That means almost half-half. Half has never been involved in a CEA study, and the other half and a quarter of them have served as the PI investigators or health economists in a study, and the other quarter is involved in a study, so be familiar with the issues, cost-effectiveness analysis. All right, and I will have another poll to see, have you been involved in decision-making to adopt an evidence-based intervention? So has been intervention means this treatment has been approved to be cost-effectiveness, and then you're in decision if you want to adopt it. No, yes, yes, I hope people have seen a committee make decision if if the facility can adopt that intervention. And to some extent, maybe people provide consultation on this decision making.
And we'll give everyone a few more moments. Looks like we're starting to slow down here. Okay, so I'm going to close this out. And what we're seeing is 42% of the audience saying that they have not been involved in decision making. 42% of the audience saying yes, they have. And 16% to some extent. Thank you, everyone.
Okay. Oh, that's great. That seems it's a similar pattern as the first poll. So then I think I will be try to show more examples in the following topic. And then we'll go to background of CA use in the United States. Before we discuss the CA use in the U.S., I would like to give an introduction on the U.S. healthcare resource use focused on efficiency. This diagram measures the current healthcare expenditure in terms of percent of GDP. So percent of GDP reflects the share of resource allocated to the health sector. Since the share of resource allocated to health is increasing with the level of income, yet in most of cases, right? Yeah, when your income is higher, you want to allocate more resource in healthcare. And we may see that the GDP per capita in U.S. is higher than other countries, so we allocate more share. But with this difference, you can see that the United States is 17%. I think this is 2016. I think 2017 is close to 18%. It's still increasing, and compared with other developed countries, and we're much, much higher in terms of share. That is the I'm pretty sure that it's over the optimal point in terms of welfare economics point of view when you allocate the resource at different between health and other goods, and you on the margin, that is marginal investment and the marginal return equivalent. I'm thinking we're across that point. So then you look at next slide, it's the current expenditure per capita, and you see we're almost double than the other country. And then we look at outcomes, some outcome index. So life expectancy at birth. So U.S. is with the lowest 78.8 years. That's the lowest among the other countries. So it's the worst. Then we look at the infant mortality, and we're the highest. Now, people will see these two outcomes may not measure the outcomes. These two indicators may not measure the outcomes in the details. So I got a report compared provided by the Commonwealth Foundation, and that has the good comparison among 11 countries. They actually compare the they rank the outcomes in five dimensions. It's the quality of care, access, efficiency, equity, and healthy life. And again, our expenditure is the highest, and the U.S. is at the bottom at the efficiency and equity and healthy life, and overall ranking is at bottom. But in terms of quality of care, we're at the average, depending on which category. We have ranked overall ranking is number five, so we're in the middle. Quality of care, but we are in the access, the cost-related problem. That's when people are sick, then they did not see a doctor because of the cost issues. That is, we're on the bottom. So this gives a good picture of where we are in terms of inputs and outcomes. So if I have summarized the background and the implication is among rich countries, U.S. healthcare system is at the bottom on efficiency and equity, access, and healthy lives. High cost of medical care and administration, large disparities in access and insurance coverage are major factors of the poor performance. Then the question is, can cost effectiveness be used to improve the efficiency of the resource use in the healthcare. Then we see, look at the CEA, the cost effectiveness use in US and other countries. The use of CEA in US Medicare is the largest sector that uses some of the largest the healthcare program. We can see some examples. Medicare used the preventive care Medicare programs. And then we also talked a lot about the Oregon Medicaid programs. The Oregon prioritizing health service in the Medicaid program, this can be traced back. This is a story on traced back to 1980s. So. 30 years ago, 30 or 40 years ago. Following the recession in 1980s, the Oregon Medicaid program faced a budget shortfall. And to meet budget constraint, and the state Medicare program tried to prioritize procedures with a priority list. I've spent some time to read this this case, and I feel it shows the complex of using the concept of cost effectiveness into the healthcare resource allocation. In terms of methodology and the background and the story and also development, this Oregon Medicaid case and shows many implications. But I will summarize this. And first, I feel that the negative political consequence can occur when priority method denies some procedures, and especially leading to death of identifiable lives. There are a story, and there are sad story about this, a boy, a 7 years boy with leukemia, and was denied to get the bone marrow transplant, and then it was died. And the second issue is the commonly used cost effectiveness analysis is to determine if a new treatment is cost effective and compared to standard care. But budget is usually not considered. But the Oregon Medicaid program has to make decision based on almost fixed budget. So affordability must be considered in such a case, considered together with the cost effectiveness principle. The cost effectiveness procedure may not be included without actual funding, so that's the issue. And I'm going to discuss the affordability later. The third observation from the Oregon case is that Oregon Medicaid use of cost effectiveness is not at the macro level that determines the appropriate budget. Right, that's thinking there's budget, then how much we can allocate, we can cover, what procedures we can cover with the priority. So this is not trade-off between healthcare and other public goods. But in any case, Medicaid program demonstrates the difficulty of using cost effectiveness to allocate resources in the healthcare system. And the use of CEA in U.S., now, I think preventive care has been the CEA has been widely used in preventive care. I mean, if you go to the CDC website, you can see many of those cases that cost effectiveness principle is used in the preventive services. And in other countries, at least some examples in other countries, in Canada and in UK, where the it's a typical single-payer system, and you will see that has the cost effectiveness has been widely adopted as the principle in terms of resource allocation. And again, then the other European countries also have some to some extent use the same cost effectiveness in their healthcare system. The summary of the CA use in U.S. and other countries, that is health plans, most developed countries consider cost effectiveness and use for coverage decisions, especially for new drugs and technologies. But cost effectiveness findings not always followed. There's other factors that have to be considered. I will use some examples in the following discussion. Then in U.S., most of CA is mostly used for preventive care. Now let's talk about barriers to CA use in the U.S. It's difficult to have a complete picture on this topic with just a few slides. But in general, there are three major barriers to CA use that's discussed by Peter Newman in a couple articles I cited here. And the first one is the culture of the society does not support CA use. For example, the society does not like rationing health service with specific risk setting. And also it does not like to add costs into medical decision making. That is what I learned when I work with physicians. They don't think cost should be a factor when they make decisions how to treat patients. The second, the interest groups can have strong influence to the legislature in the U.S. in the American political system. And the third one is the U.S. healthcare system is splintered. Cost effectiveness works best when there is a universal healthcare financing system, just single payer system such as UK. But I will use Medicare as an example of this issue. In 1989, Medicare proposed four criteria for covering new technologies, and one of them is cost effectiveness. But 10 years later, Medicare formally withdrew the 1989 proposed rule and proposed two criteria for new technology coverage. That is, cost effectiveness has been dropped. Now, challenges to establish the criterion for coverage decision in Medicare, I think there are several of them. The statute that enacted Medicare put the criteria of coverage is reasonable and necessary, not cost. So it is always difficult to reach common consensus by all stakeholders, including parties. Parties like patients and providers, payers, employers, and also the pharmaceutical and medical equipment industries. And also, I think the public is also discomfort with the clinical decisions influenced by entity other than the patient and the patient's clinician. So those are some challenges. And there's potential impact has concerns raised in the industry that on the innovation. Then the last challenge I think is the cost, the principles of cost effectiveness analysis. It's not consistent always with a reasonable and a necessary concept. So that's the really in the U.S. And I'll give you two examples to see how Medicare considers a procedure for coverage. Now, the first case is a paper by Gillick discussed a long volume reduction surgery. The surgery that cuts the damaged part of the lung and stapled the remainder together. It is used to older patients whose daily function was substantially limited by their advanced chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, OPCD. The provider used the name Blacktomy, which is the legitimate billing code, but different procedure for reimbursement at that time, because the long volume reduction surgery does not have a code. The overall result of the randomized clinical trial showed that the surgery has small improvement in access tolerance. And then the Medicare, after excluding a group of patients who were determined to be at a very high risk of death, the exercise capacity was increased in 16% compared with 3% of the patients who were treated medically. So after looking at those data in detail, so the agency announced that it would offer surgery to patients who are not at high risk of death. And the estimated cost is between $600 million and $1.2 billion. That shows that the decision cannot be simply made without further examination just by the result of the CEA study. Now, another case is implantable cardioverter defibrillators. Now, defibrillators, which are like a conventional pacemaker, are battery operated device implanted under the skin with wires threaded into the heart and are intended to prevent sudden death. A clinical trial showed an absolute decrease of 6% in the risk of death among treated patients, as compared with those who were treated medically, and then there's a relative risk reduction of 31%. Then the leading manufacturer of defibrillator submitted a request to CMS to expand the Medicare coverage to include the population identified by the new study. The Medicare Coverage Advisory Committee unanimously supported the coverage of defibrillators for the primary prevention of sudden death in patients meeting the criteria of the latest clinical trial. But during the next 4 months, the CMS commissioned a thorough review of the data by its internal coverage and analysis group. Now, this group obtained additional information not available to the Medicare Coverage Advisory Committee, and which showed that much of the benefit seen in the study could be accounted for by patients with inducible ventricular tachycardia, and that only the subgroup of patients with a conduction abnormality has a statistically significant decrease in mortality with the defibrillator therapy. So CMS announced its intention to expand the coverage of defibrillators, but only to the subgroup of patients eligible for inclusion in the recent study. So this case is, there are some cost effectiveness analysis about these two procedures. For the long volume reduction surgery, the ICER was $98,240 and $330,000 per quarter for three subgroups of patients with specific medical conditions. And the defibrillator's ICER is between $30,000 and $85,000 per quarter. Now, if we use the CEA criterion, the long volume reduction surgery should not be covered, and the defibrillator should be covered. Now, this case showed that it's not always consistent. The decision-making in coverage is not always consistent with the cost-effectiveness principle criteria, and also the decision-making in Medicare coverage sometimes involves a further examination. So let's give you two examples. It's not always straightforward. Then we look at some challenges in using CEA for prioritization of health service, and the barrier to CEA use that is more specific in the United States, but those challenges I'm discussing is more general. The barriers, I'm going to top three of them. And the first is complex of CEA method. And second is affordability. And the last one is healthcare input constraints. The cost effectiveness analysis consists of uncertainties due to the following factors. The first, it is from a societal perspective, which leads to a large variation in cost estimation. And another issue is, as I discussed earlier, that's a long time analytical period, lifetime. That can also, based on uncertain factors assumed in the model, then we, usually in decision making model, and we have different health status, health states. Then during the lifetime, then you will see the health status can be correlated. That makes the model more complicated. Then you will see distributions in one health state may be related to distribution in the other health state. That generates uncertainties. And also data accuracy is another issue. We usually do not have all the data. We have to make some estimate. And the method to deal with the uncertainty is to conduct a sensitivity analysis. But as we know, the sensitivity analysis can be complex too, because you can just generate the analysis, fix all other factors, and to look at the sensitivity of the outcomes to a single factor, or you can look at sensitivity to multiple factors. In many cases, the confidence intervals is too large to be used in decision making. So that is so people feel not comfortable about the outcomes from the cost effectiveness analysis. Affordability. What's my time?
You're 11:38, so you still have plenty of time.
Okay, thanks. Another challenge to CEA use is affordability. Now, the cost effectiveness analysis depends on long-term effect, just as we define it as a lifetime, it's long-term effect. But making any coverage decision generates a budget impact in a short term. When a budget is fixed, adding a new treatment will crowd out other services. And the quality adjusted life years generated by this service could be higher than that generated by the new treatment. So if a budget is not fixed, not adopting a new treatment means that you're crowding out other public service and or private consumption. From the welfare economic theory, we also need to evaluate the utility sacrifice from giving up this service for good, for healthcare. So affordability is the issue. We have to pay attention when we try to adopt a new treatment, even though it is cost effective. I'm sorry, I didn't change the slide. Now this slide I just discussed the short time budget impact versus long time cost effect. And there's fixed budget and there's additional funding. If there's additional funding, then you have to consider it's appropriate to crowd out other public service or private consumption. Like you, United States or the share of GDP in healthcare, that's been reached to almost 18%. I mean, every $100 we produce, then we have to spend $18 for healthcare. Now, the third issue I'm going to address is about healthcare input constraint. Usually in cost effectiveness analysis, we just put one constraint in budget, right? When decision makers will look at the interventions ranked by ICER, and the intervention with a lower ICER value will be selected first for coverage, right? Until you run out of money. But in a healthcare system, some inputs, such as physicians, specialists, skilled labor, and cannot be added in a short time. So the input constraint should always be considered when making decisions in coverage. So I have been involved in the VA query program. Query has been promoting implementation of evidence-based interventions. So those interventions have been shown cost-effective and improved quality of care. But in most cases, when the facility adopts this new intervention, there is cost, probably more staff time, physician time, but there's no budget matched with the new intervention. That will add the burden to the facility, right? So you cannot, so it's, there's constraint and they cannot hire more physicians because of the new treatment, the new strategy has been used into the in practice. So in that case, you will see that I have heard that from physicians, their burden has been increased with all this quality improvement programs. So that's the issue, and we have to we have to solve when we try to improve the quality of care and use the cost effectiveness principle criteria in our healthcare system. Now, when we talk about cost effectiveness analysis, we are on the mind is that we can use it to improve our efficiency. And in the United States, we have there's the implication that we may use CEA to control the cost, the fast growth of healthcare expenditure. Now, I would like to make another poll after my discussion at this point. Now, do you think is CEA an effective tool to control healthcare expenditure and improve efficiency in the U.S.? Heidi, yes, okay, the poll is open.
Sorry, just took me a second there. Yep, the poll is open. Again, we'll give everyone a few moments to respond before we close it out and go through the results.
Okay.
And it looks like we've slowed down here, so I'm going to close it out. And what we're seeing is 11% of the audience saying no, 34% saying yes, and 55% saying to some extent. Thank you, everyone.
Okay. Okay, thanks. Yeah, great. I think that we got it. Now, to answer this question, we should look at the drivers of U.S. healthcare expenditure, right? The recent article in JAMA, Zeke Emanuel article published, it shows that the pharmaceutical expenditure, high-margin procedures, and imaging and administrative costs are driving factors of U.S. healthcare expenditure compared with other high-income countries. People may think, well, physician salary is also higher in the U.S. than other developed countries, but the fact is the number of physicians per 1,000 people in the U.S. is lower than other countries, lower than that in other countries. Therefore, the expenditure of physician salary per capita in the U.S. is only slightly higher than that in other developed countries, high-income countries. Now, if you think of that, the administrative cost is not sensitive to CEA, right? You use CEA or not use CEA. And the expenditure of high-margin procedures and imaging are high due to both price and the volume. And the CEA cannot deal with the volume problem, right, and also the price. Therefore, so CEA may improve the efficiency of the resource use, but has a limited impact. No, I think has limited impact on cost control. finally, I want to concluding this lecture with a few comments. First, I think we must control the growth of healthcare expansion. I think we have passed the optimal point of resource allocation between healthcare and other goods in general. But in the United States, this issue is not for a specific cohort. I think a low-income cohort may not reach that point. The second comment is that using CE alone is unlikely to be able to control the expenditure growth in the U.S. effectively, because CE does not control the volume and price of health services. And then information technology, and recently we use value-based purchasing, I think it may stop the unsustainable growth of healthcare expenditure in the future. Here, I want to make another point here. In fact, I feel that growth in healthcare spending in the U.S. Rapidly outpaced the growth of overall economy, and as a consequence, that the increased proportion of Americans simply cannot afford the adequate care. That's the fact. But this is not unique in healthcare. If you think of more generally, almost every industry, the product and the services offered are so complicated and expensive, and that only people with a lot of money can afford them, and only people with a lot of expertise can use them, provide or use them. And you just look at the thing, telephone. In the first maybe a decade, then you will see such a case. Telephone, photograph, and air travel, automobiles. That's all the case. So the healthcare, but then there's the transformation changes and the productivity rises and so rapidly, and that those services and goods have been affordable. Now, healthcare today is the same. Without subsidy by large employees, most of healthcare would be inaccessible to most of us, right? But at some point, I think these industries were transformed. And and healthcare can also be transformed like the other industries. So that's what I'm thinking. And this transformation in business, now I'm doing more in the economics. I think I pay attention to the business field, and then the agent of this transformation in business is termed as disruptive innovation, which is another topic about how to make healthcare affordable and accessible conveniently. If we think of that, and we have almost get to the point that you can drive the car with the computer, and you also think with the computer technology, with the information technology, and with the diagnosis technology, and also bioscience, and the medical care may be totally changed, transformed into different states. So that may be the answer to really control the cost of healthcare expenditure. So I would just stop my talk today, and any questions, I'll take the questions. And there's the references I put in the few in the last three slides.
Okay, there are a couple questions in the queue. I want to encourage anybody else who has a question to please type in your question in the Q&A panel, and we'll go ahead and read it off for Wei. So the first question asks, how do other countries that use CEA to make decisions deal with uncertainty? Why are we more timid?
Well, I think the uncertainty is still the issue, but I think it's not most of the new treatment or new drugs are in the reasonable range, and also with some other factors considered, so they can deal with this. The question is, are you going to accept that principle? And then when you accept that principle, you can always deal with specific situations, make some exceptions.
Okay. The next question asks, Could you expand on your point that CEA does not control volume and price of health services?
Okay. Now, when they compare, and the article by Zeke Emanuel, and they actually look at the healthcare expenditure, compare U.S. with other countries, they find that the our expenditure is higher, and they actually compare the expenditure, is the expenditure per person or per capita. So, and when they find how this is high, it's U.S. is high in both price of the procedure and also the use of the procedure. That means we use more procedures for the population in the United States than the other developed countries. So you have both volume and price high, and the expenditure equal to the price multiplied by volume. That's where you get the high. Then if you use the cost effectiveness analysis, you can always you can judge if this procedure is cost effective, but you do not judge if how many, if it's appropriate use of the procedure. So that's what we're recently, I think the value-based purchasing addressed this issue, that is if for medical condition, we try to look at the input and look at outcomes, and we look at the actual values of the of treating, of the treatment. So the value-based purchasing, I think it provides some answers. That means we don't care how many things you do, but what we care is to cure or to deal with a specific medical condition, what resource you have used and what's the outcome.
Okay. If anybody has any final questions, you could type them into the Q&A panel. I just wanted to ask you, Wei, do you think there we should be doing more cost-effectiveness analysis, and for what type of projects?
Well, yeah. I think in the United States we have many cost-effectiveness studies, right? And we have publications, increasing number of publications. I think we should continue because it's, the principle is it will stay, and then the but it will not be used as an effective tool to control the cost. I think to control the growth of the expenditure, we have to think of the innovation in terms of how the healthcare is delivered, and also the new technology will really change the way of healthcare delivery and lower the cost.
Okay, thank you. There is another question. This person asks,
yeah.
If there's an intervention that's ineffective, strong evidence for a certain group of patients, but we continue to pay for it, how can we change that?
Well, it depends on this procedure. I know there are some drugs which are very expensive, like the new drug for hepatitis C, but it's so, it's so effective. So. And in that case, you know, we have to consider if the budget is available or not available. Like in the VA, we cover the new drug for the hepatitis C because we have a budget and we can cover it. We think the patient, the veterans deserve that treatment. But you know, with other programs, if the budget is not adequate, and then they cannot cover it because they have to drop other services that may help for other patients. And so I think that's the issue. And also there are other factors like the orphan drug, and the drug is the only drug for that medical condition. Even that is very expensive and the cost ineffective. But then you have to included because so there's other factors. Cost effectiveness is only one of those factors in decision making for coverage.
I just wanted to also point out that there is a lot of work that's being done on de-implementation, and so that's looking at treatments that have been found to cause harm. So it's not that they're less effective, it's that they actually will harm patients. So there's a lot of work being done in that area. So that's
I think that's another Yeah, that's another area that cost effectiveness analysis can be very helpful and identify those treatments which is cost more and is not effective. In that case, we should de-implementation some of those services. Yes. I think Paul has done some research in that area, Paul Burnett.
That's it for the questions. Did you want to say any final words before we turn it over to the poll?
I think the reform for the U.S. healthcare system is so challenging to us. We have reached to a point that we really cannot continue with this trend of the growth in healthcare expenditure. So we have to work hard to get this problem solved. But it's difficult, I feel, given the healthcare system, given the political system, and also some opinion from the society. All right, thank you. I think that's, but I still think cost effectiveness is a useful tool to improve the efficiency in resource allocation.
All right. Thank you, Faye.
Thank you.
Heidi, do you have any final words?
Nope. I just want to remind the audience that when I close the meeting out here, you will be prompted with a feedback form. We really do appreciate all your feedback. Please take a few moments to fill out that feedback form. Wei, I really want to thank you for taking the time to prepare and present today. We really do appreciate the work that you all put into this. Thank you, everyone, for joining us for today's HSR&D Cyber Seminar, and we look forward to seeing you at a future session. Thank you.